I always had a private doctor. I didn't think I needed VA care. Then I learned VA is ranked above private care systems nearby and costs less. I'm getting the best care of my life with providers trained to treat veterans. Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for this hyper amount of benefits mentioned here.
I was a soldier, then a veteran, a husband, and a father. And with my VA home loan, I'm a homeowner. No down payment required and no PMI. Build your future with the VA home loan. Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for this hyper amount of benefits mentioned here.
Anyway, is that air cold on you? Or are you okay? You gonna be all right?
Thanks for thinking of me, but I'm fine.
It's cold from over here.
I'm hot-blooded. Check it and see.
Okay.
Got a fever of 103. It's a little foreigner for you from like 1980, I think.
I appreciate it. All right.
That's right. Dated myself yet again.
Hi, I'm Jim. Welcome to the Unbound Performance Podcast, where we explore the world of sports and performance mindset training.
And I'm Caroline. Each week, we talk about the strategies, habits, and mental framework that help us to excel. Let's get into today's episode.
Leadership according to Bill Cowher.
Yeah, it's good. Good little article. Of course, I grew up in Pittsburgh, where actually Mr. Cowher is
Mr.
from.
Cowher.
I remember fairly early in his career as head coach of the Steelers, I'd gone up there to go to a game, and the people I went with, we went to church Sunday morning. We're coming out, and the game actually was Sunday night, so we didn't have a time squeeze or anything. And this is like perfect Steeler fan insanity. So I'm walking out, and some little old lady's next to me, and she just looks at me and with her full on Pittsburghese accent, you know, what do you think about Carr? And I said, well, I mean, I think he's going to do pretty well. Like, I like him. I'm going to give him some time. He goes, the fire's ass.
Who was the coach before? This was when he was new.
It was Chuck Knoll had retired. He was fairly new. Chuck Knoll won 4 Super Bowl championships in the 70s, but it hadn't been winning, you know, late in his tenure. But it's just like, didn't any of the like message of love and everything like connect at all, you know, in the church service?
This was on the way out of church?
Out of church.
Oh, I thought it was like as you were like walking home or something like that. So this was a church
just finished. Goer. Like, yeah.
Okay, that's hysterical.
And a guy, I mean, I don't, maybe it was, he'd been there 2 or 3 years and she was ready to cut him loose. But he played linebacker at NC State, married a woman who was a basketball player at NC State. So he's got some local connections. But he was, and he played linebacker in the NFL. It's pretty intense. Fiery guy, but related to players. But I can always see him with this like chin jutted out, this snarl and spit flying.
A jutting jaw.
That was him. Yelling, spit flying out. I still remember one game. Somebody had picked up off a pass by the Steelers quarterback and was running down the sideline and Cowher was right there and just like reared back. It was, you could tell it was all he could do not to tackle the guy or blast him. So he was pretty beloved by Steeler fans, but pretty successful leader. And now he's been retired for almost 20 years and does the CBS football thing. He wrote a book a couple years ago. It was really good. Heart of Steel, kind of his memoir. Highly recommend that. But his thoughts on leadership, I thought, were pretty good. And we both, I think, have plenty of experience, good and bad. Whether it's in athletics or in business world. And even leading at home.
Yeah,
I think the principles that there's 3 of them we talked about, they're kind of universally applicable. So I thought it was a good article to chew over.
Well, I think too, even like we talked about, even like you mentioned, like athletics, business at home, you don't need to necessarily be like a leader with a definition. You don't need to be the CEO right. of a company. You don't need to be the coach of a team. You don't need to be necessarily a parent or like, you know, you can be the leader in a friend group. You can be someone who doesn't have a title that suggests you are a leader, can still learn and possess and, you know, exude those leadership skills that are going to make you a better person, a better friend, just a better contributor to society. I think we can be leaders in ways that aren't necessarily super visible. And I think just like having those traits of what defines here as a leader may or may not define you as such, but define you as a quality person that delivers value in the world.
Yeah. I liked he gave a definition of leadership. I think the definition of leadership is the ability to do these three things: to unite people, to guide the direction that you're going, and to inspire all toward a common goal. And then he gives three traits that he thinks all leaders should have.
Yeah.
But I like that definition, and it serves your point that you don't have to be prime minister or something to be a leader.
And the article opened up too about saying how he felt like leadership came naturally to him, mm-hmm. but immediately after talked about some books that he read just repeatedly during his career. So, you know, I think him as the example specifically sort of points out like it can be a nature versus nurture and something that you can have in you, but you still need to develop along the way and, you know, sharpen those skills regardless of.
Yeah, I know. I used to have
to start with.
Had this discussion with a friend of mine who's big deal retired corporate exec, but he was pretty convinced that leaders are born, not made. And I took the opposite tack. But I think leaders are born maybe with a predisposition to a magnetic personality or ability to draw people in, but that doesn't. If you just hang your head on that,
doesn't make you a good leader.
No. And
makes you a good dictator.
Right. So I think developing qualities of leadership. I mean, if you look at the different kinds, even if you just stick with football coaches who have been, you know, really successful in terms of winning. Chuck Knoll, who's very calm, you know, and very intense, brilliant. Coach for the Steelers, and took a franchise that was not successful and turned it into a dynasty in the 70s. But then you also have, you know, some more intense versions of that, whether it's like a Bill Parcells or even a Bill Cowher, they're. So I think you just have to be yourself. I think that's pretty important. But the first quality, got it right in front of you.
Yeah. Well, I was looking through this, you know, identifies there's a list of three traits. And before I even got scrolling to that, I thought courage is one that really is really required of a leader. And that's the first one he has, is have the courage to do things and have a vision to know what you want out of it. And, you know, I think a lot of times I think on a surface level, we hear courage and we think of it as like bravery of like, I mean, this is a silly example, but like you had the courage to go get on that roller coaster and not be scared. Like very generic, like stepping into the world and kind of allowing yourself to try things. But courage is a very like, takes a strong emotional will to be able to have courage, like in a leadership position where you have to say the hard things. You have to tell people what needs to get done. I think it needs to be, not just the courage to talk to your group of people, your subordinates, your team, whoever they are, about what needs to get done, but also having the courage to have the vision and share it and have the belief that you as a team can achieve those takes some courage, and you need to be able to exude that confidence and courage in that goal to get everybody to be on board. So,
and
make a little sense?
Yeah. Adding to that, the courage to make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes people just waffle back and forth, waiting for some perfect decision, or
just overanalyzing and just
instead of just, I'm going to make the best decision I can for like the best possible reasons. But that doesn't guarantee perfect results. Like, I'm just doing the best I can. And that may mean we have to adapt or adjust moving forward. But putting your neck out there and deciding,
making a call,
is, you have to do it. You know, whether it's, you know, I know Jocko Willink, he talks about this constantly in his leadership stuff about, don't wait around for the perfect decision, but be willing to make a call. And then, all right, let's throw everything we've got into making this call work.
Well, and like the more you sit and analyze something and try to get the perfect one, like you're going to have failures, whether you analyze for months and years and weeks and days, whatever the amount of time, and you made a decision, or you made a decision with what you, the information that you have right here, right now, there are going to be wins and losses. I think also being able to make a quick decision on one thing allows you to move on to the next. And I think when you're in a leadership position, there's lots to be done. And if you're going to occupy your time and your headspace with this one decision when there's 10 other things that need to be thought about or decided on, it's not as distracting. So it's not that you want to make a rushed, uneducated decision, but the ability to make one with the information that you have with confidence and then understanding that you may need to adapt from there.
And like, I was watching the Lions-Ravens game last night. Dan Campbell, who coaches the Lions, he's fairly famous for going for it on fourth down.
Yeah.
Like, almost a fault. I don't know. I think it's pretty wild. I think players love it. So, like, the first drive was to get down there, and it's fourth and two. They could kick a field goal. And Troy Aikman, who's a brilliant player, he said, I think sometimes maybe you want to get the points, you know, when you're on the road against a really good team in your first drive. And, but he chuckled, like, clearly Dan Campbell's not worried about it.
Right.
And so being willing to make that call with a national television audience watching and knowing, like, if you, they don't get it, everybody is looking at you like you're crazy, like, you know. And so having the courage to make those kind of calls, even though it's not war, it's just football, but it's football with a lot of money on the line, like at so many levels and a lot of attention. I mean, Monday Night Football, that is it. Yep. And so he clearly, and he, it happened a handful of times throughout the game where we're just going for it. And you have to admire it, because that is some guts.
Well, I think too, making decisions. I'm a quick decision maker. Like, this is, we'll go off top topic for 1 second. Like, I tried on 5 wedding dresses and I picked one. Like, I didn't go to a million different stores. All my friends were like, "You went what?" And I was like, "I found one that I liked. Like, if I found one that I liked, I'm not going to go try on more to see if I find one I like better." Like, that just didn't make any sense to me. So, like, while that's a, you know, more materialistic or vain type of decision, but, like, me being able to make quick decisions also helps me avoid, like, the anxiety of just, like, thinking and overthinking and thinking deeper and wondering what if. Like, when you can make decisions quickly in the line of client service, when you can make quick decisions quickly in conversations in a relationship, in decisions on how you handle things with your children, on how you handle things with your coworkers, the faster you can make a decision, the faster you can proceed to either resolving it or progressing with that next step. And I think that that's one of those things that I've always been very good at making. People think that I like make rash decisions, and I think sometimes I do. But I would rather make quick decisions and proceed with the next steps than just like spend forever and ever and ever angsting over, is this the right call? Because that, to me, that tends to create more anxiety than being I think I made the wrong decision, let me pivot from there, versus I can't make one at all. That one feels way less confident than, okay, I made a decision and it wasn't quite the right one, but now what's step two? Versus just the lack of confidence in wondering and waiting and searching. And
at Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Deciding.
Plus, there becomes this some kind of law of diminishing returns. You can gather information.
Right. At some point.
At some point, you've gathered all you need.
Correct.
Like in your case with the wedding dress.
That's all I need.
I had five.
Yeah.
Like, I could pick one.
Yeah.
Like, if I hated all five, all right, then we move on.
Precisely.
But that paralysis by analysis thing is...
Oh, gosh. It's painful.
Hard to watch sometimes.
Yep.
But... the second one, great leadership requires great humility, which I love. I know every time Jocko Willicks asked about number one quality that every leader that's successful has to have. And so that's what he says, humility, for a lot of reasons. But I know, you know, like when I look at my own career, whatever, as a head coach, probably one of the things that I look back and like, I am proud that I took that. Like I surrounded myself with like the best possible people I could get. Yep. Most of the time they were better than me. They knew a lot more than I did, and that did not threaten me. Like that was, I thought that's what our players deserve.
Yeah.
Why would I not want to surround myself with people who were excellent, who knew a lot and were great at it? So I did.
Like, I think that's like I use the word dictator again, but like dictator versus like a delegator in a way. As you've even talked before about when you had a really, really high skilled talented team. I don't remember what this specific example was, but you said something like it was working. They were running the show. Why was I going to step in and start changing things or making comments or suggesting something? And I think that you see a lot in leadership in sports or in business of people who have all the answers, they know it all. I think people who tend to make quick decisions also, like I had that personality trait of like, I'll just take care of it. Like, don't worry, I'll just take care of it because it needs to be done like my way and I'm quick to proceed with next steps. But A, that's going to burn you out real quick. And that's going to also, if you have a group of people who are looking up to you in the leadership position, they're going to sort of stop trusting you. They're going to stop thinking that their contribution matters. And ultimately, having people around you, and I think in the episode we'll release next week, I think we're going to dive into this a little
October
bit
October 2nd.
Okay, week after next? No, next week.
Yep.
Yeah, next week. Look forward to that one. Just talks about the systems in a business or in a group or in a team that require everybody to do their part. And that person at the top cannot be the controller and leader of all. They can be the leader, but they cannot be the dictator, controller, has to be done my way. Like, if you don't rely on the people that are there to support you and fill in the gaps, or well, step one, acknowledging the gaps that you have in your own abilities and recognizing there are people that need to fill those, that's going to cause a spiral down real quick. But if you rely on the people and you have the humility to accept that there are people who are part of this process, part of this chain of command, if you will, that ultimately contribute to the success of everybody, that requires humility to let them in.
Well, yeah, I mean,
to do their jobs.
I find one, like people who tend to display a lack of humility are often very insecure about their place, very defensive.
Sure.
So they want to come across being really strong and
proving themselves in a way.
They know more, whatever. And, but also it's a lack of like developing leadership in the people you're with. Never mind letting them feel like their contribution matters and, I think that's where, you know, in the business world, it's very easy to be short-sighted and just think about improving your portfolio for in the quarter and the year and not have this like end game. You know, Simon Sinek talks about that all the time, the ultimate end game, you know, what's best for the company long-term as opposed to just this short term mentality. Never mind, like if we develop more quality leaders, that's best for us now, but also best long term. And that's what people want to feel valued when they come to work, or players. Like if I'm asking players, like, what do you think here? Like, do you like this play or do you hate this play?
Yeah.
And they feel like their opinions matter, that they got skin in the game, And they're on a path to like mastery, to growth. And
well, I think that leads to also them like in the situation where you do make a call and they need to follow along. That makes them feel more confident to be able to say, okay, yep, I'm going to do what you said, because there have been times when you've listened to what I've said.
Right.
And that leads to that sort of going both ways. And then to your point about the long-term success, you know, you got to look also in a business when there can be a very successful CEO who is a dictator and does all the control and doesn't give a lot of autonomy to anybody else. But that's not building the culture of that company so that when that person leaves, it continues right on the success. So there's an example in It Takes What It Takes about a coach. I don't honestly remember which team it is. You're the details person here usually. But it was a very successful, I think it was a football team, and they had a new coach come in because the old one retired or whatever, and the new guy just didn't want anything to do with hearing Trevor Moad out about his process and what he did with the team. I think the guy was like, who the hell is this guy? And Trevor said in the book, he said, I immediately knew that this guy was not going to be successful. Yep. Because he wasn't open to what had worked in the past. And it wasn't that he was saying he wasn't open to me, Trevor Moad, of what I do, but he could just tell the guy immediately didn't want to have any more meetings. He wasn't open to exploring what had made the team successful in the past because he believed that he had the keys.
When some people are so threatened by what's happened before, and also just from a control freak standard, I mean, if you're just going to surround yourself with sycophants and sure, pretend to collaborate,
yep,
you may be like uber talented and smart enough to navigate these waters, but at some point,
yeah,
like when you leave, okay, then what? And
there's no foundation of that left behind.
There's nobody there to fill the gap. And people quickly realize like you're in it for yourself and you're not in it necessarily for the well-being of all.
And that leads to people deciding they're going to be in it for themselves. Like the yeah, opposite of the example I exactly said, where if you listen to them, they'll listen to you when the time comes. If you don't ever listen to them, well, that just creates resentment where they're not going to probably listen to you a whole lot either. I mean, he says it wasn't about having the best 53 players. It was about having 53 players who accepted their role they had, excelled at that role, and felt like they were all one part of that wheel. No one felt any bigger than anyone else. This is why I always go back to humility. All good leaders need it. Like yep, you said about building the portfolio versus building the wheel, I think is probably yeah, the better comparison yeah, there.
Yeah, it was good. And it leads right into yeah, the third one. Leadership requires willingness to listen, to learn, and to adapt. And I know he talked about coaches that he learned from, whether it was Marty Schottenheimer or Bill Parcells or Bill Belichick. I think, too, that some of those guys were contemporaries and he was learning
sure,
from them even while he was competing against them. I think that's really interesting. But being able to acknowledge that you don't have every last answer and somebody else may have some insight to, sure, worth exploring,
yep,
that's what this whole thing is about, people, like whatever we're doing. And if we can make people feel a part of it, they're valued,
yeah,
that their contributions matter, those are the things that people want to feel when they come to work. Yep. They want to feel that when they walk in the house. And I think if we are going to be effective long-term leaders, we are required to do what we can to help people feel like that. And it's one thing, like if I have a job that has to get done in a week and I don't have time to explain all this stuff, you just do what I tell you. Okay.
Yeah.
But that's not a sustainable approach. Right.
Every now and then there's times just listen up, move on, do what I say.
Right. And look, we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
This deadline is real.
Correct.
We have no choice. But I think even then, if you have this overarching approach to leadership that isn't generally like that, then you get the buy-in and trust right away.
Right.
Okay.
Away.
All right. We got it. We'll dive right in. We'll talk later.
Yep.
I think all of it, the foundation of it is, do you care about the people that you're with or not?
Yeah.
And like for real. And some people just fake it. That doesn't work. And you may trick some people short term.
It's not sustainable for any.
But sooner or later, people figure it out.
Yep.
That this guy is full of crap. And then what? Then you got to, well, people move on. Then you keep, you know, doing the Jedi mind trick with whoever else yep, you bring in until they figure it out. And it's just not fulfilling or rewarding or meaningful in any way.
I think from a leadership perspective too, when you have, let's just in the business, like you have turnover because people are unhappy or whatever the reason is. I think too, when you start to recognize that people were leaving because of the culture, I think you naturally become fearful that the next people are going to leave. And so you almost double down on your process because you feel so compelled to like convince them that it's right. good.
How
and
wonderful
that
it how is. Wonder,
yes, yeah. that it ends up being another fake version of it. And yeah. you get turnover from that. It just, I think it takes some real deep introspection on, to yourself and your business or your team or whatever your structure is to be honest with yourself about what's working, what's not working, and how to pivot both directions.
And I think, too, foundationally, you know, the servant leadership model, you know, he gives the example of being at CBS and how he still he'll walk out and bring, you know, whatever, donuts or whatever. To the whatever, the staff that is off the camera, you know, because he wants them to feel like, look, we're all in this together. Yeah. None of us matters more than anyone else. And I guarantee you that goes a long way because we can say what we want, but like Bill Cowher's an NFL Hall of Famer. Like he's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And if he's going to come out there and give you donuts and say thanks and let's go make the best show we can.
It's meaningful. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah. Like that's going to really resonate.
Yeah.
And instead of him walking around like he's, you know, King Crap and, you know, everybody, oh, there's Cowher.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think in that example specifically where it's a production team and then, the,
yep.
Again, we talk about the consumers of sports a lot, but as the consumer, we see those three, four guys sitting at the desk with their lapel mics on, having conversations with their papers in front of them and their coffee and whatever. There's some, like, there are probably 20 times the number of people behind the scenes that had to run the, like, one of my uncles works in production for CBS, or he did for a long time. And I mean, he would just go to these events and for days, they're running wires, they're testing things, they're setting up cameras, they're setting up backup cameras, they're setting up the, what if the outage goes out here, I have to have a backup plan for this. And as the consumer, all we see is the guys talking about the game. And we think that's the most important part, but they wouldn't be there doing that if there wasn't that whole team of that crew of people doing that. Same with, you know, we see concerts and world tours and things of people, you know, building that exact same stage and set up in Germany as they did here in the US and they did in Brazil. And those people, and I don't even think I would define them as like the lower downs. They're just like an integral part of that process and that delivery that
you can't possibly discount
their, correct. You can't possibly discount their part in that role.
Well, and it's a humane versus an inhumane way to see others.
Yep.
And if you look at every person has meaning and value and worth, and I just happen to be good at this, they happen to be good at that.
Yep.
And sometimes, well, because I'm good at this, I get paid a lot of money. That doesn't mean that I'm
better,
a more worthwhile person. And I think as a leader can't ever lose sight of that.
Yep.
And we're there to serve these people and how best can we come together and pursue, you know, these goals, these desired outcomes, whatever. How best can we like max out the process day to day of becoming excellent?
That requires humility.
Yep, it sure does. Sure, and care.
Yep.
Building relationships. So I thought it was a really cool little article on The Athletic once again.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Unbound Performance Podcast.
Your support helps us continue to build our community. If you're enjoying this content, please like, subscribe, and share.